Intervju Radija Študent.
Nate Woolley. V tokratnem Ereš intervjuju smo se pogovarjali z newyorškim trobentačem in improvizatorjem Natom Woolleyjem, ki na letošnjem Ljubljanskem jazz festivalu nastopa v dveh projektih. Včeraj je nastopil kot član zasedbe Adam Lane's Full Throttle Orchestra, v soboto pa bo igral v kvartetu Trumpet and Drums, kjer mu družbo delajo Peter Evans, Paul Layton in Jim Black. Govorili smo o njegovem gostovanju na festivalu, različnih pristopih k igranju, džezu, svobodni improvizaciji, noizu, načrtih za prihodnost in še čem.
Ok, so hello, Nate.
Hi.
I just want to ask you right away, how did you feel about the concert last night?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. That's a band that I don't get to play with a whole lot. And it's not the kind of big band free jazz music is something I haven't done in a while. So it's always fun to get together with those guys and play that way.
So you're in the middle of a tour in Europe with this band, or is just this festival?
With this band, it was just that festival. I'm in the middle of a tour, but it's a bunch of different bands and it's kind of all over the place, so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for the listeners who maybe don't know, Nate played yesterday with Adam Lane's Full Throttle Orchestra on the Ljubljana Jazz Festival and will be playing on Saturday again with a different group.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, how did your cooperation with this festival come about? I mean, you play with two projects, how did this happen?
It originally started with the group that's going to play Saturday, which is called Trumpet and Drums.
Yeah.
And Pedro Costa, who runs Clean Feed Records, just wrote, and he was interested in doing something with Peter Evans and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put that band together out of two duos. Peter has a duo with Jim Black, and I have the duo with Paul Layton, and decided to do something like that. And then when it was set that we were coming over, because I've played with Adam's band for a long time, then mm-hmm. it made sense for me to just come early and play those gigs too.
Okay, so you're telling that in fact it's Pedro's idea.
Yeah, it was Pedro's originally to do the band. I think his original idea was to do Peter and I and bass and drums and more of a jazz group, but we, as time went on, it got stranger and stranger, and it's kind of where it is now with the two drums.
Okay, but do you often work in this kind of projects when someone else will make the initiative, someone outside the group?
It's rare. I mean, I think maybe only with Pedro. Sometimes when you play festivals, they kind of suggest this is what we would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this case, it's great because I love playing with all those guys. Sometimes they put you together with musicians that you wouldn't necessarily play with if it was your choice. But in this case, you know, I've had a duo with Peter for a long time. I've had a duo with Paul for a long time. We've all played with Jim, and it makes sense. So it's a nice thing.
All right. So is there a difference in your approach to playing with the group you played yesterday and the one on Saturday? How do you approach it as a player?
I don't necessarily try to approach it differently. Mm-hmm. I always look at things as kind of language, the way that I play as a language. So it's in certain situations you would choose to use certain words over other situations.
Mm-hmm.
With Adam's band, because of the way the tunes are structured and the fact that they are tunes and there's a lot of swing and it's a different kind of rhythm section than I normally play with, I'll tend to play more notes and more jazz things than I would sound stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the chance of going. I mean, last night I played a lot of sound stuff because it made sense the way people were playing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas things that are freer, sometimes it's more shocking to play a bunch of notes in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always kind of you look at everything you can do as a tool and how it'll affect the music based on what's going on around you. But I don't really prepare to play differently unless I know, like, it has to be very specific, and then I'll kind of mentally be there for it.
All right. So you are also a prolific solo player. Mm-hmm. Have released a bunch of records, some just solo trumpet, some with combination with other stuff. Mm-hmm. And you play, occasionally you play very differently than the way I heard you yesterday. Mm-hmm. Maybe when you're focusing more on droning or some other aspects. And I'm really interested how this informs your playing as a whole. I mean, how does, like, your more radical solo recordings, how do they inform what you play on groups like yesterday on Saturday?
With a group like last night's, it's difficult. I don't take that much out of the solo recordings for that. I mean, that's really kind of more from the way I grew up playing jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But there are elements. I don't have the freedom to use a lot of the solo stuff in a situation like that. But in a group like on Saturday, the long drone stuff, I'll be using the guitar amplifier and feedback on Saturday. It allows me to become part of the band as opposed to a soloist in a way, which is strange because the solo trumpet thing is very specific. But in a band setting, I can become just more like another player of the band as opposed to like a soloist. So I can use the feedback to just create washes of sound, or mm-hmm. the low drone stuff can kind of act like a bass. And I use the solo material more in that way than I do when I'm soloing, I think. So,
all right. So, and do you, most of the time, I guess you work at the same time with different types of groups, like mm-hmm. your solo stuff, and or do you have some periods of time when you focus only on solo or in jazz groups?
I do focus on certain things, but it's never up to me, unfortunately. It's kind of like, this is coming up, I have to get ready for this.
Yeah.
When I get home from this tour, I have about 6 weeks where I don't really have any gigs, that I'm taking time off. And during that time, I'll just concentrate on solo stuff. Because I feel like I've done a couple solo tours of Europe this year, and I need to kind of take the material that came from all that and do something with it. And so that's mostly what I'll concentrate in the next couple.
You have a lot of solo live recordings?
Not even live recordings, but just playing solo every night for a couple weeks, and you develop new techniques or things that come up, and I want to just kind of deal with those and get them down on a recording and think about them some more outside of performing.
Yeah. All right. So I wanted to ask you, maybe in the context of what you were saying of using the feedback and being part of the ensemble, could you maybe just tell us a little bit about this special set of records, the Seven Story Mountains?
Yeah.
I heard the one you did with Chris Corsano and Spencer. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, what's your memories of this?
Well, the Seven Story Mountain is a seven piece set of compositions, and so the idea is that there's a tape thing, like an electronics mm-hmm. tape piece. That the first one I actually did on reel to reel tape with splices, and with each piece the tape gets changed, but it kind of stays the same, and then I add different players on top. So mm-hmm. the very first one we did was with Paul Litton and David Grubbs. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was the one that you heard with Corsano and Spencer Yeh. And then the third, they've gotten bigger and bigger as mm-hmm. time's gone on. So we recorded the third one last year, and it was both groups with David and Paul and Spencer and Chris mm-hmm. and two vibraphone players. And it's kind of... The idea is to try and create something that's abstract but ecstatic, like religiously ecstatic. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of me screaming through the horn and singing through the horn and feedback and bell sounds and long drones. And the idea is to kind of not necessarily create a religiously ecstatic space, but to play with the idea of that. And so we just, like I said, we recorded the third one, and then we Philip Glass actually invited us to do it in New York. And so we did a short version of the fourth one coming up. So yeah, it's exciting that we can continue to do them.
And you plan to release all of it?
Yeah, the third one will come out later this year on Important Records, which has put out the other two. And then, yeah, hopefully we'll record the fourth one later this year as well.
So. All right. So maybe it's interesting to know that yesterday before you, Joe McPhee played with Ingebrigt Hacker-Flatten, and in their playing, there's a kind of clear sense of this more religious leanings of the free jazz tradition, maybe just as a part of a lineage. So do you feel some kind of kinship with this, also connected to what you were saying about this project, the Seven Story Mountain?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the way that those guys kind of, they deal with the religious aspect of things is different, in that they're kind of dealing with the gospel spiritual tradition and the free jazz tradition, like you said. And I got connected to that kind of playing through an old teacher named Ron Miles, who's a trumpet player in the U.S. that not many people know, but that kind of playing through Albert Eiler. And it, you know, it was, I still have a lot of that playing in my jazz playing, because of the way I grew up and listening to that kind of music. But the Seven Story Mountain thing became more of how far can you abstract it and still have that feeling. So instead of having the kind of gospel and spiritual melodies, can you get that feeling in a way that's much darker and louder and has a different kind of feeling? So that's kind of where it took off from. But definitely there's a connection there, I think, in my mind at least.
Right. So you, I read an article about you. It was an interview, and you were speaking about different, even when you improvise, you have like different approaches, different schools, different players. So how is it in the groups you have? How do you decide? I mean, do the players kind of influence what kind of improvisational approach you will take?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, everybody has their language, and so you play a different way. And you kind of realize what the breadth of their language is. So like I just did a tour with Chris Corsano and a bass player from Brussels named Hugo Antunes. And Chris and I just spent the time learning the breadth of each other's language. So I found out kind of how far to the jazz world he could come, and he found out how far to the noise world I could come. And we spent a really nice 2 weeks living in that space and just being, trying to figure out where we could be and how far we could push each other in different directions. It was great. I mean, and that's kind of what you do, is feel each other out and understand how you can put things together that make sense, you know?
And do you see in your environment a lot of players getting this kind of outside experience, outside the jazz world, learning about this kind of different sound sensibility and then bringing it into a more like mainstream jazz stuff? Is it happening a lot, or
it's happening what's your a little opinion? Yeah, I mean, I think it's happening a little. I obviously Peter Evans does it quite a bit, but I think what I'm seeing is more that there are people that we're in the beginning phases of that, where it's harder for them to integrate it into the jazz world. So it's becoming kind of tricks. You know, they're playing a mainstream thing, and then here's where I do funny sounds. And then, you know, and that's always, there's always a phase where that happens before there's a big group of people that are really able to integrate it into the way they play naturally, you know.
And maybe you could mention, who do you think does a good job in this way?
Well, I think Peter does. I mean, I'm always amazed at how quickly Peter can move in and out of it. Matt Botter, who was playing Barry Sax last night, is actually a tenor player. He doesn't normally play Barry. And his playing does that really well. There's a guy named Jeremiah Zimmerman, who's a clarinet player. Yeah. And I think he's great at not only doing that, but also adding in the electronics in a very organized way. You know, drummers like Corsano. There's a drummer in New York named Ben Hall that does it very well. I mean, there are certain players that are doing it. And I think there's another generation coming up that are starting to do it. There's a guy named Jacob Wick who lives in San Francisco, who's a great trumpet player. Brad Henkel is a trumpet player in New York that I foresee them being able to do it in a new way.
Oh.
So I think it's cool.
All right. Yeah. Well, so maybe for the last question, just your future plans. You said you were going to deal with solo recordings, but any other stuff coming up?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing more stuff with... I have a quintet that does jazz stuff, and we have a record that we're finishing up, and I have a long duo with Paul Litton, and we're doing a lot of work in the fall, which I'm happy about because that's my favorite thing.
Coming to Europe?
Yeah, we're going to play at Vels this year, so we'll be doing that, and there's a new band with Ken Vandermark that will be around next year, and a new band of Paul's with Craig Taborn and Rudy Mahal and me. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. It'll be busy time.
Okay, so good luck with your stuff and have a good gig on Saturday.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Slišali ste intervju z Natom Vuljem, ki jutri drugič nastopi na Ljubljanskem jazz festivalu, tokrat v zasedbi Trumpet and Drums. Koncert ob 16. si lahko v klubu Cankarjevega doma ogledate za ston. Intervju je pripravil Marko Karlovčec.
Intervju Radija Študent.